The early years of government under the Liberals saw Canada structurally adjusted. There were cutbacks in government spending with various effects, different effects on social programs and spending for health, education, and unemployment insurance. And this was, by the books, anyway, a success. The government has posted huge budget surpluses over the last few years, and so it's sticking to its winning formula. But a letter signed by 100 economists from across the country is calling for changes to that policy. It's calling for increased spending. Why? Joining us to answer this question is David Robinson, an economist with the Canadian Association of University Teachers. You're welcome to CKUT.
Thank you.
Now, you're one of the signatures on the letter calling for increased spending for as much as $10 billion, which would put the government actually into a slight deficit position this year. What will this do?
Well, I think there's two things that the spending initiative would do. In the short term, it would certainly help deal with the immediate problem of an economy that's falling into recession, that is, in fact, in recession now. We saw that recently with a huge increase in the unemployment rate. But the second thing it would do, it would help repair some of the damage that's been done over the past 10 years through cutbacks to various programs that provide for the long-term stability and the long-term health of the economy and of society generally.
Now, Canada's economy is faltering. Everyone seems agreed on this. What exactly does this mean, and how is this happening?
I guess what it means for most people is the labor market, which was quite bright in the year 2000, has turned considerably sour. We've seen the net creation of maybe 40,000 jobs since last December. That compares with 360,000 jobs that were created in the previous year. And we've seen higher unemployment. We've seen an increase in part-time jobs as companies are laying off full-time people and often hiring them back on a part-time basis. So for most people, it's going to mean a tougher time getting a job or hanging on to a job, which, of course, affects your bottom line. Why it's happening is it's really the same old story that we have in market economies. It largely stems from a overcapacity or overproduction of commodities and products that we had too many goods chasing too fewer buyers, but also we saw in the year 2000 an increase in interest rates that had an impact on business decisions and on consumer spending and so on. But we also, I think, bringing it more complexly into the international marketplace, is we have a global economy that really is in a state of crisis right now. We have Japan falling into recession. We have Argentina on the verge of defaulting on its loans. So we really have a lot of instability globally, but also locally.
Now, would the economists and the economic planners at the finance department agree with your assessment, with your description of the problem?
Probably not.
I think, where would they differ?
I think the folks at the Ministry of Sharp Pencils would think it's largely an accounting issue, as they tend to approach most things. They would likely argue this is just a small temporary downturn that's to be expected, and we'll be out of it in no time. And in fact, Paul Martin has said that we have lower interest rates now, and that's going to help. And plus, we have these wonderful tax cuts that he announced last year that are also going to help. And he also even referred in a strange way to things like unemployment insurance as an automatic stabilizer that's going to help people. That latter point's a bit disingenuous on his part, since the Liberal government has really cut back on unemployment insurance. And I think one of the things that people are going to find in this particular recession is when you lose your job, only about 40% of people are going to find out they actually qualify for benefits through unemployment insurance. And for those people, there's not a lot of options. And so those automatic stabilizers that Martin refers to are really quite weak.
What effect is the increased difficulty in trying to get unemployment insurance going to have on the economy as a whole, not just on individualized, but on the economy as a whole?
Well, on the economy as a whole, it means that when people lose their jobs, they're not going to have that kind of income through unemployment insurance that they normally would have. So it means people are not going to, we're going to see households losing a big chunk of their income, so they're not going to be able to spend. That's not going to be able to create growth in the economy. The other thing it's going to do is it's going to force more people onto social assistance. Mm-hmm. And that's problematic because in 1995, Martin introduced changes to the way in which Ottawa finances the social assistance. Prior to 1995, they used to cost share on a 50-50 basis with the provinces. the cost of social assistance. Now they no longer do that. So all those increased demands that we're going to see over the next little while are going to fall solely on the provinces. And many provinces, quite frankly, don't have the fiscal capacity to deal with that. If you talk about a province like Newfoundland or Nova Scotia, for instance, they just don't have the resources to deal with rising social assistance claims. And so Ottawa's effectively kind of sheltered itself from that downturn.
In the U.S., which is an economy to which we are intimately linked, the government there will be spending more in response to a slowing economy. Should we here in Canada be emulating their action?
I think we should certainly be emulating their action in terms of taking positive action to stabilize the economy. I'm a little bit concerned that the general direction in the U.S. is to rely heavily upon tax cuts rather than increased spending or putting money into the pockets of the unemployed. The difficulty with the tax cut approach in the current economic climate is that there's no guarantee that the savings people reap from reduced taxes will actually translate into increased spending. When you're afraid of losing your job, you might just build up your bank account and save it for a rainy day. The other difficulty is, of course, is that tax cuts only apply to those people who have, for the most part, significant amounts of income. I mean, if you're a middle-income earner, the tax cut doesn't really amount to a heck of a lot of money. And yet it's those people, it's middle-income and particularly lower-income earners, that tend to be hurt the most during an economic downturn and tend to need the most help. Mm-hmm. And so tax cuts aren't the most efficient way of dealing with that in the current economic climate.
Now, how and where would you recommend, then, that the Canadian government invest?
Well, I think in order to if we're talking about a relatively short-term stimulus package of about $10 to $11 billion, which is really what you need to have any significant impact on the economy, really I think there's a couple things that the government could do. First of all, would be to create, even if on a temporary basis, although I would argue it should be more permanent, but even on a temporary basis, a kind of special supplementary benefits through unemployment insurance. That people who are finding themselves not qualifying right now would qualify, and that we would get money into the hands of the unemployed as quickly as possible. So, you know, for about $4 or $5 billion, we could certainly put into the unemployment insurance system a much stronger social safety net component. The other thing that the government could do, of course, is to invest in some of the capital infrastructure of the country, which has suffered immensely, not only over the past 10 years, but over the past 20 years. Capital spending by governments in Canada has just been dismal. And if you drive down a highway or if you walk into a hospital or a school these days, you certainly know that's the case. The capital infrastructure of the country has really been underdeveloped, and so we could certainly put some money into that, which has a high value added, or it gives you a big bang for your buck, because you have to hire people to do it. And in construction projects, there's high value added Canadian products that are also involved in that kind of construction. So it gives you a much more spin-off, much stronger economic spin-off than other kinds of action.
If I understand you right there, you're saying that by investing in infrastructure, we hire Canadians to use Canadian products to make things for the benefit of Canadians, and so we win in all directions?
That's right. I mean, and you also, you know, modernize and update your infrastructure for the future, and that promotes future economic growth as well. So it's something that's long overdue, and this is an excellent opportunity to do it. And in the process, we're going to create jobs, and we're going to stimulate some economic activity in a sector that's been relatively underdeveloped for the past 20 years.
Now, when you put it to me like that, it seems impossible to argue against, yet that's not what's likely to come down in the next budget from the finance department. What's going on?
Well, I think there's, you know, we're dealing with very different views of how economies work and what economies should do. Mr. Martin, I think, in his budget, will argue that we must stay the course, that the interest rate cuts the Bank of Canada have introduced and his tax cuts are enough to deal with the slowing economy. The 100 economists who signed the letter said that's not enough, that the nature of the recession that we're in now is not one in which interest rate cuts are likely to help us. And the reason for that is it's unlikely that consumers will use the extra savings that they have from interest rates to spend. It's also unlikely that businesses will take advantage of lower interest rates to invest if they don't see any prospect for sales growth. And so what we argue is that in order to ensure businesses that there will be an increase in sales growth is you have to stabilize the incomes of consumers. And that should be the ultimate priority, is looking at the unemployment rate and saying, how do we get that down? We've had dismal economic growth in the labor market throughout the year. Arguably, the labor market's been in recession since last December. How do we deal with that? And that should be our number one priority. I suspect Mr. Martin will say very little about the unemployment rate. He'll focus more on how all the wonderful things he's done in the past are protected, and that there's certain security needs that have to be met.
Now, you've said that the problem in the economy right now stems from excess investment. And I want to know what that means for the efforts that the Finance Department is likely to take to fix the problems. But before that, what exactly does that mean, the idea that it's excess investment that's causing problems in the economy?
Yeah, it's not necessarily excess investment. I mean, it's a typical kind of business cycle problem that we're facing. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, in fact, about a year ago, that people were arguing that the business cycle was likely at an end, that we had advanced our knowledge of the economy, that businesses had adopted new practices that allowed them to better and more accurately gauge their inventories and their production, that we wouldn't fall into this classic problem that happened in capitalist or market economies. That's a general crisis of overproduction. And what happens is businesses tend to produce, expecting certain sales growth. Their inventories get too large, then they have to cut back on production, lay off workers. Those laid-off workers don't buy products anymore, so the inventories sit there. And until the inventory is clear, we don't get renewed production again. So that's what's happening right now, is we do see an excess of commodities or products on the marketplace and not enough buyers buying them. And until those inventories clear, we're not really going to get any more increase in production and therefore economic growth. And as long as the unemployment rate keeps falling, there's not going to be a lot of consumers buying those products. And so this is where you get into the vicious cycle. And the way you break the cycle, what we argue in our letter, is you stabilize incomes, you stabilize employment, and that'll help those inventories clear.
Now, this is the first recession since the zero deficit policies that the Liberals introduced starting in 93, 94, 95. How will that change, or how will that change what the government can or should do in response?
Well, I think it gives the government a lot more fiscal maneuvering room than what it had in the past. In the recession of 91, the government did face a rather large deficit of in excess of $40 billion. Since 1997, we've recorded about $36 billion in surpluses. That gives the government ample maneuvering room to even record a small deficit this year as a way of stabilizing the economy. And I think this is the key point, is, you know, we can't fall into the accountant's trap of arguing that we have to balance our books every single year. It doesn't make any sense. What you try to do, and what sound fiscal management is to balance your books over the course of a business cycle. And so in bad times, you're going to spend more, and in good times, you're going to take in more. The government, however, seems to think that it's locked into this framework where it has to balance its books every single year. I think this is just ludicrous. This is the same kind of thinking that was prevalent in the early part of the Great Depression. And one of the reasons why the Depression lasted much longer than what it should have is governments were cutting spending at the same time as the economy was going down the tube. So we had what economists called a pro-cyclical policy. That is, government actions were advancing the downturn in the economy at that point. We had something very similar in the early 1990s, where we had, as the economy was slipping into recession, we also saw the Bank of Canada move to raise interest rates, which of course further strangled economic growth at that point. So that's another thing that's different about this recession, is we do have interest rates that are working in a counter-cyclical fashion. That is, they're trying to counter the downturn in the economy. The difficulty, of course, is, you know, whether that's going to be enough. But there are different things.
Now, over the last 7 years, the government has posted billions of dollars in surpluses, and many companies have done well, though a lot of them seem to have started to slip again in the last year or so. That said, it seems that for most people, their incomes after inflation is taken into account have actually not gone up very much. My question is, who has benefited from the last 7 years of zero deficit planning?
Well, I think if you look at the income trends, it's pretty clear. It's the top 10% of income earners have done very well. The bottom 10 and 20% of income earners have done very poorly. That's that's not surprising, given that it's the bottom part of the income ladder that relies heavily upon government transfers, which have been seriously cut back over the past 7 years and even longer. And so for those folks, there's been a serious deterioration in their income. What's also interesting, and it's also one of the hidden stories, is that their market income of the lowest income groups, that is the income they get from their jobs and other investments and so on, although the investments aren't really a major part, it's mainly through employment, has also deteriorated over the past 10 years. And that's largely because of the quality of jobs that have been created and then the kind of bifurcation in the labor market between good jobs and bad jobs. So there hasn't been a lot of income growth for people at the lower end, even in their market income. So they've done significantly worse off, and people at the high end have done significantly better off. That's a real contrast to what happened in the 1980s, after the 1980s recession in 83, 80, 84, where the lower income groups actually recovered much stronger, much more quickly than the higher income groups. But we've seen a kind of reversal this time around. And again, given the direction of the government and its interest, it's not really a big surprise, unfortunately.
As a final question, the economic planners, and for that matter, the people who write the business sections of the paper, as far as I know, come from the top 10% of income earners. They would not be acting in their own self-interest at the possible expense of the rest of the country now, would they?
I guess you'd have to ask them that. But I think it's a question of your worldview. And for some people, I mean, if you move in certain circles and you take on a certain elective affinity for certain kinds of policies. I don't know if it's necessarily self-serving or in some case, maybe I think it's also a bit of a, you know, ideological posturing that there's a real belief that this is the way in which markets most efficiently function. But I think, you know, certainly the past 10 years in which we've really moved down this road of neoliberal or neoclassical economics, which says that, you know, government should play the smallest role possible, the markets reign supreme, and everybody will be better off. I mean, all the evidence just points decidedly in the other direction. In terms of distribution, the market has not distributed income very well. In terms of the overall quality of life that most people are living, it has not done a great job. And then that's not to say anything about the environmental degradation that we've also seen over the past 10 years. So I think the claims that you read in the business press, you have to be very careful about what's actually being said. Read between the lines and look at your own experience and ask yourself, is this really the way the world is?
David Robinson is an economist with the Canadian Association of University Teachers. Thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.